As will become abundantly clear as I tell my story, I am a soft townie. And I became a soft townie when we moved to Macomb in 1980. And while I'm not a farmer myself, I have to say that sometimes I do think of the acres of pages and the nice, even rows of words as being what I till, and the young minds and the ordered rows. And I would be remiss, because I would not be here today if it weren't for one of my educators who's in the audience, Mr. Molden, who I have to say, I was a lackluster student in his class, but I was full of enthusiasm and great humor. And I remember going to get tutoring from him directly, and we were working on a story problem, which you think I would be good at, loving the words. And he finally stopped after 35 minutes and said, "Do you plan on using geometry in the workplace?" And I said, "No, I think I'm going to use words." And he said, "All right then." So, Mr. Molden, it's so nice to see you. So, in 1980, I moved to Macomb with my wonderful parents and my two brothers. I was five. My older brother was seven, and my younger brother was three. And my story begins at Chandler Park, just down the road, my first ever Heritage Days. And we were there, ladies and gentlemen, hoping that luck was on our side in the getting of a pig. Because, and this is wonderful, and I love that Jane brought this up, this made me excavate my memory. I remember an auction. And yet when I called my dad said, "No, it's more like a drawing." And yet I do remember standing next to my father thinking, "Please let us get the pig. Please let us get the pig. I want to ride a pig." I really didn't think that we would get to ride the pig. Now, what we got was a piglet in a box. There's nothing cuter than a piglet in a box. I was five, and I was like, "This piglet is the cutest thing ever." And I remember my brothers and I, who did not unify over much. We were rabble-rousers, but we unified over this pig. We loved this pig. And the first mistake my parents made, who were thoughtful people, and my dad had deep ties to this area and had been raised on a farm in his high school years, but his father had always farmed. But the first mistake my parents made was that they allowed us to name the piglet. And I don't know who decided on the name Petunia, but as soon as that came out, we were all like, "Yes, it's Petunia! We love Petunia so much!" And that weekend, and like we'd wake up, we'd go look in the box. We'd be like, "What's the piglet doing? What's Petunia doing? Oh, Petunia! Petunia's sleeping! Shh! Don't wake Petunia!" But the following weekend, we took Petunia up to my grandparents' farm. And as a child, filled with wonderment, because I think that's the natural state of children, particularly when they are allowed to be on the land, as we were allowed to do at my grandparents' farm. There was always a level of work. My parents heated our home with wood, and so we'd go up there every weekend as soon as it started to cool down to aid my father in the, he would be splitting the wood, we'd be hauling the wood to the truck, loading the wood, and then we would drive it home, and then we would unload the wood. And so there was always kind of labor involved, but it was fun, or we bickered and had a good time with it. My father was always saying, "Pay attention, pay attention. This is not fun and games. You could get hurt. Farms are a matter of life and death." And remember this, because this comes up later. But there was a level of labor, but when we were done with our work, we had free reign of acres and acres. And there was a creek that we would go and we would play in, and we would explore, and we were silent together, and we were loud together, and we were allowed to roam on our own, unaided, as long as we were back for dinner, or when dusk started to fall, because that meant we were going to head home. And so it was a place of wonderment. And when we'd go up on the weekends, what we always would do would we'd clamor out to go see Petunia. And again, while we did not agree about much, we agreed that Petunia was the finest pig that there ever was. And she was the smartest pig that there ever was. And she knew each of us kids. And she responded to us, we swore, in different ways. And we would fight over getting the longest branch that we could then scratch the entirety of her body. And her snout was a thing of beauty to me. Now, it should be noted that winter did come, and my dad was building a smoker in our backyard, and I was like, hey, look at my dad. He can, as Jane's father could, he can do anything. And then a weekend came, and my mother was hand grinding sausage, and I thought, wow. Because that was, while it sounds strange, like she was just hand grinding sausage, it didn't seem strange to me because I was raised in a house, we didn't have television, we read, my mom was an artist, my dad was a man of words, and he used his hands to build things, and so it was just like, hey, mom's making sausage, yum! And we sat down to dinner and began to eat, and it was delicious, and it was like breakfast for dinner, which of course, as a kid, you're like, this is the best breakfast for dinner! And my older brother, who was 7 at the time, the age that my son is now, said, is this Petunia? Now, the last time that I saw Petunia, now it was winter, so we weren't going up to chop wood as much because we had cords and cords of wood. We had worked really hard. And so we hadn't been up to my grandparents' farm, and so we didn't really notice that Petunia was no longer in the round shed. In our minds, she was. And of course, the answer was yes. And I know there were tears. And I remember my older brother, who was 7 and quite stubborn at that time, asked my parents, how could you do that? And he refused to partake of Petunia. Now, my brother, in keeping with this idea that really a farm is oftentimes a matter of life and death, when we were young and we were there all of the time and my dad helped my grandfather with harvest, one year my dad brought up the grain. Now, when he went inside, before he went inside to work with the attendant with the full bin of grain, my older brother asked to be set on top. He just wanted to sit on top because, of course, as a child, it looked like a mountain of grain. It looked like something that you should be able to walk on and sit on like a throne. And he had a orange, Hunter orange stocking cap on. And my grandfather had given him like 4 pieces of bubble gum. And so he was chomping on this huge piece of bubble gum. And he was sitting atop the corn. And my dad said, stay there. Don't move. I'll be right back. And of course, he went in to speak to the attendant. And while he was in, another young man came around to the back of the bin, unscrewed the big wheel, and the grain came rushing out. And of course, my brother was sucked down. And out of the corner of his eye, my dad saw this flash of Hunter's orange. And he turned and he ran and he jumped up on the wheel and he drove in and he was reaching for my brother and he got him by the shoulders and brought him up. And there was my brother coated in corn dust, his eyelashes even. And that bubble gum had saved his life. It was chock full of corn. And he spat that wad out, didn't even cry a bit, and life went on. And yet, on Thanksgiving, when I asked my dad about it, and he recounted the story for me, the terror that was so clearly on his face was one that, as a parent, I have known. It was a muscle memory. And he said, please tell me Joe does not remember that. So we're going to flash forward to then when my daughter was my brother's age and is the age that my son is now. We went to a dairy farm because, like me, they're soft townies. Although I do try to instill this love of land, and I do bring them to my grandparents' farm. They are soft townies. And we went to this dairy farm, and it was this magnificent afternoon. It really was. It was just, it was glorious. It was everything I could have dreamt and more. And then as the afternoon was ebbing away, the farmer pointed out Bessie. And Bessie wasn't producing as she should. And he offhand, in a very offhand way, said, you know, but so one of these days, Bessie's going to be a cheeseburger in your Happy Meal. Now, we are the type of parents who try not to do McDonald's Happy Meals, period, but that got through to her. And Anna, who is definitely my child, politely raised her hand and said, excuse me, sir. And he said, yes. And she said, could you please repeat yourself? And he said, Bessie here isn't producing like she should, so one of these days she's going to be a cheeseburger in your Happy Meal. And she said, that's what I thought you said. And a silence descended upon Anna, and I could tell she was thinking deeply. And we went into the dairy shed to have our chocolate milk. She refused that, and she wouldn't really talk. And then on the bus ride home, I said, is something bothering you? And she said, so cows, like the hamburgers Dad grills, like those are cows? And I thought, I have failed as a parent. And I said, well, sure, sweetie, like when we drive to the farm and we see cows, like they're livestock. Like livestock means like they're to be eaten. And she said, I don't think I want to eat meat. I think I want to be a vegetarian. Now, I am also my parents' daughter. And so when she said that, I thought, well, I have to respect this idea, right? And I have to see, like, can a seven-year-old be a vegetarian? Is that safe? Because there was so much I didn't know. And so I talked to her pediatrician, and then I started doing all of this research, and then I read this book by Jonathan Safran Foer on eating animals. And it changed me. And I thought, back to my brother asking that question, how could you? My parents butchered Petunia. My parents knew Petunia in the same way that I knew Petunia. My parents were able to look into the face of Petunia and then butcher her and feed us with her and honor her in doing so. And I realized that I'm not able to do that. I'm not as strong as they are. I cannot look into the face of an animal and think about eating it. So 2 weeks later, my husband's grilling veggie burgers for Anna and I, because I'm on the vegetarian boat too. We're rowing together. I'm like, sister, we're in this, right? Anna says, oh, mama, can't I just give thanks to the cow and eat the cow? And I said, why, yes, you sure can. And so 2 weeks in, she was out. 5 years later, I still can't do what she's able to do, or my parents. And that's okay. That's okay. But when I think about my parents and when I think about the gifts that they've given me, when I think about that, when I understand what they did, when I talk about this whole idea of my farm roots, the last time that I was at my grandparents' farm, it was with my father, and it was September. And even though this farm is only 48 miles away, and I try to bring my kids up at least 4 times a year, this was a day that was just for me and my dad. Because my father and spending time at the farm, that is the place where I learned that we all go to the land, and it is nothing to be afraid of. This is the place where I found morel mushrooms in the deep, dappled dark of spring. This is where I watched a log become dirt. This is where I was able to listen to all of the many layers of silence. This is the place where I sat on the porch swing underneath the giant oak that my grandparents' ashes feed, and with my feet planted there, pushing back and forth, realized that One day I will probably be called upon to put my father's ashes in that mix, to understand that this is the place that I've come back to, that this is the place that I'm as deeply rooted to as that giant oak, that this is the place that I find such glory in, because it is the place of my family. It is the place of my father. It is the home of my mother. It is the home of my beloved husband. And it is the home of my children. It's where I live. Thank you.